Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic, and guide to all things cinematic. He joins us weekly. The films, The Dead Don't Die, Insight, and Woodstock, 3 days that defined a generation. I'm exhausted. How are you?
Well, I hope to exhaust you even more, Jill. I'm okay. How are you this week?
Will not complain.
Good, good, good. Well, we have to start off today a zombie movie. Yes, another zombie movie. And this zombie movie was made by a very fine filmmaker named Jim Jarmusch, who's made a lot of movies over the past recent decades. He is a very, very fine filmmaker, a fiercely independent filmmaker who has always worked completely on his own terms outside of the Hollywood system. And he's made a lot of really wonderful movies, going back to his very first feature, Stranger Than Paradise, a number of others. Made some very minor films that aren't so good as well. I do not enjoy reporting that The Dead Don't Die is probably the worst movie he's ever made. It is so awful. Now, I guess that there are some people out there who are liking it. It actually opened up the Cannes Film Festival this past spring, and the word out of Cannes was that pretty much everyone found it to be a total stinker. And now that the movie has arrived in American theaters, and I think it's arrived in American theaters on the strength of Jim's name and also on the strength of its very interesting cast, by and large is being met again with very negative responses. It is really not a good movie. Now, I mentioned the cast. Let me just kind of run through some of the people who are in this movie. A lot of them, not all of them, a lot of them are real Jim Jarmusch regulars over the years who have worked with him before. Adam Driver is a newer face, of course, but we have Bill Murray, Tom Waits, Steve Buscemi, Chloe Sevigny, Danny Glover. Who else is in this? RZA, Rosie Perez, Tilda Swinton, Iggy Pop, Jim's own wife, Sarah Driver, has a minor part in it. So we have all these terrific people, some of them in major parts, some of them in very tiny parts. A really, really wonderful cast. And yet the movie is still really bad. So one problem here is the zombie genre itself. It's now quite a few years. In fact, it's a long time since the zombie kind of took over from the vampire as the kind of horror creature of choice. It used to be, going back to Bela Lugosi as Dracula in the early 30s, it used to be that vampires were kind of the most interesting movie monsters. Vampires have a kind of a seductive quality. You know, they're often kind of handsome, not always, but often, and or beautiful in the case of female vampires, and they kind of can slither into your life and turn it upside down. Zombies are a very different kind of creature. They shuffle along, they're brutal, they don't talk, they're very sort of nasty creatures. And why the zombie has taken over from the vampire over, really, ever since the 60s, as, again, the horror movie creature du jour or du year, is a complicated and interesting question that has a lot to do with our culture, generally speaking. The big change took place in the 60s with George A. Romero's very, very great zombie movie, Night of the Living Dead, which remains, I think, the greatest zombie movie of all time. And ever since then, zombies have sort of reigned over everything. Now, The Dead Don't Die, Jim Jarmusch's new zombie movie, tries to do sort of a new twist on this very popular genre, and it really does not succeed. One of the things it does is to pay all kinds of homage to the great George A. Romero zombie movie, A Night of the Living Dead. In some ways, The Dead Don't Die is almost a remake of that film. Not really, but almost. And this has been picked up by some critics, because The Dead Don't Die has all these sort of pop culture references in it. it, and even sort of political references. The zombies are sort of symbols of modern Americans being materialistic and not really thinking things through and so forth. All of this really goes back to George A. Romero's second in his trilogy of zombie movies, Dawn of the Dead, which has a kind of a bit of satire about this. The zombies in that movie kind of flock to a shopping mall because that's where they went when they were still alive, and again, materialism and so forth. Now, I've always regarded Night of the Living Dead as a very great zombie movie, and the first of the two sequels to that, Dawn of the Dead, is one of the most overrated zombie movies of all time. The third one, Day of the Dead, is a very minor film from George A. Romero. But The Dead Don't Die, in harking back to those movies, sacrifices any originality that it might have had. And even if you've never heard of those movies and you just see this movie, I think you will find it very – well, I know you won't see it, Joe. I think you will find it very, very slack and without energy. There's just no real bite to it. It doesn't work. The cast – I was struck by this all through the film while I watched it. The cast just seems as bored with the movie that they're in as I felt about the movie as I watched it. Now, I used to know Jim years ago. We showed some of his work at the New York Film Festival back when I was one of the programmers there. Known him for years. Lovely guy. Fabulously talented, very original filmmaker, and so it is with regret but with honesty that I have to report The Dead Don't Die just don't work. And if you want to see a really good zombie movie, go back to one of the classics like Night of the Living Dead. You can afford to skip this one. Now, my second film for this week, Jill, is another zombie movie. Yes, yes. And in this case, it is a German zombie movie. The German title is Endzeit. And the American title, or the English language title, is Ever After. And it's kind of being released under both of those titles. So Endzeit Ever After is only the second feature directed by Carolina Helsgard, a German-born filmmaker who's also studied in the United States. And it is a very good and very interesting zombie movie because it really does do something very different with this genre, which, as I've already indicated, I think has by now gotten pretty much worn out. Ever After is a kind of, in a way, you might call it a feminist zombie movie, in that the two main characters are women. And the movie really centers very much. There are some males visible in the movie around the edges, but it is very much a movie focusing on these two main female characters and then another important woman who enters the movie later on. So the conceit of Ever After, or Endzeit, is that a terrible zombie plague has hit the earth, and the movie takes place in Germany, which is certainly where the plague is apparently centered and maybe is the main locus of the plague. That's not really, I think, made quite clear by the movie. But there are only two cities left in Germany which have any functioning at all anymore, Weimar and Jena. And in Jena, Weimar is almost wiped out, but there are still some people there. Jena is where there are experiments going on which are trying to find a cure for this horrible plague before it totally wipes out the human race. So the movie centers on a couple of young women who are in the city of Weimar. Their names are Vivi and Eva. And near the very beginning of the movie, sort of a horrible thing happens, and the two of them end up getting out of the city of Weimar. They would like to make their way to Jena, where they feel there might still be some hope for them. And they make their way onto an automated train, which is carrying supplies to the city of Jena. And it is completely automated. There is nobody on it except for these two young women. And there it is, trundling along, sending supplies from one place to another, off to Jena, where, again, apparently there is still something of a functioning society, although we never get there. I'll give that much of a spoiler of the movie. And so there they are. They're on this sort of standalone automated railway carriage, and it breaks down in the middle of nowhere. And so now we have our two main characters, Vivi and Eva, and they are in the middle of nowhere, and their transportation is no longer moving anywhere, and we know that there are horrible zombies who might jump out and start just doing horrible things, and above all, biting them, which is what – this is a very traditional zombie movie in that sense. That's what spreads the plague. If you get bitten, then you are done for. You are going to turn into one of the undead yourself. So there they are, kind of making their way through the countryside from one place to another, trying to get to Jena, and eventually they come upon another woman who has managed to survive for quite a while, growing some kind of – they look like magical tomatoes, which she is growing. And which apparently have the capacity to at least temporarily return life to someone who has been bitten and will otherwise turn into one of the plague. Another little subplot, another one of the plague-stricken victims. Another one of the subplots in this movie is that one of our main characters is her big quest is to always search for her younger sister, a little girl who she is afraid has turned into one of the undead. She would like to find her and find out what her fate has been and if possible to save her. So as I said, Ensight, otherwise known as Ever After, is a kind of a different twist, partly because it centers on female characters, partly because it has very few characters really at all, just a few really sort of speaking parts, main characters, and then the zombies who pop in every once in a while. It builds a fair amount of suspense. The violent scenes are managed to be violent and grisly and pretty horrible without being over the top, without slipping over into what's sometimes called torture porn. It's not that kind of a movie. And the movie is very beautifully photographed. It has a very sort of a magical aura to it. The title in English is Ever After. That's not the German title, which is more apocalyptic, Ensight, End Times. But the title Ever After captures an almost fairy tale quality that the movie has. It's a grim fairy tale, not to make a pun there, but it has that darkness that some of the old fairy tales, some of the old Germanic fairy tales really do have. But it does have that kind of almost magical look to it of a fairy tale. And that, again, is kind of a fresh twist on the old genre. So if you want to see a zombie movie that's really interesting, or a German movie that's really different from most of the things that do manage to make it to American shores, Ever After or Ensight is a good bet. It's a very well-made and in its own peculiar, crazy way, kind of a beautiful movie. Now, Jill, having saturated us with zombies for the first part of today's show, I would like to turn to something completely different, which is Woodstock. There have been a lot of rock and roll movies in recent times. I must say Rocket Man, which is still around right now, and Bohemian Rhapsody not long ago, and just rock and roll movies all over the place. And I will now just mention the fact that one of my most recent books, Rock and Roll Movies, is available from Rutgers University Press and deals with exactly this phenomenon. The movie I want to talk about now, Woodstock, three Days That Defined a Generation, is not only a rock and roll movie, but it is, yes, a Woodstock movie. It's another movie about the Woodstock Festival, and there have also been quite a number of those. It's a very thriving subgenre within the genre of rock and roll movies. The original sort of big Woodstock movie way back in 1970 was a movie called Woodstock by a guy named Michael Wadley, and it was a very long concert movie, basically. Basically, it covered the festival back in 1969 as a great big old concert movie. This new movie, Woodstock, 3 Days That Defined a Generation, is different because it is not a concert movie. It is really a very historical movie, a documentary that just kind of gives the whole story as to how the festival came to be, how it unfolded, what its impact has been, and all that sort of thing. It was directed by Barrett Goodman, whose last movie was a very good documentary about the horrible Oklahoma City bombings. So he is a documentary filmmaker with obviously a lot of versatility. So Woodstock, 3 Days That Defined the Generation, really goes back into the very beginnings of the whole thing about how a handful of young, basically business people, wanted to start a sort of a record company, a recording studio, and they hit on the idea of doing it somewhere in upstate New York that would be a little bit out of the big hurly-burly of the main thing. And then they got the idea that, my gosh, music festivals are really capturing a lot of attention these days, and why don't we skip this record label idea and just have a great big huge music festival? That might be fun, and that might be open up some fresh doors for us. And so they started to look for a place where they might have it and look for bands who they might, or singers and players who they might be able to sign up, and they eventually came upon the idea of having it in Woodstock. And then they started to publicize the idea and to search around for backing and to search around for talent and so forth. And then the town of Woodstock vetoed the whole thing, and so they had to find themselves another venue, and they hit upon this town called Bethel, not too far away, and there was a farmer there named Max Yazger who had a big dairy farm, who sold a lot of milk and yogurt in the area, and he agreed to let them use his property, etc., etc., and then the whole thing was born. And famously, they were expecting, maybe a few tens of thousands of people, and what they ended up getting, and boy, the crowd estimates even within the movie itself vary wildly, but apparently they got something in the neighborhood of 400,000 people that showed up. They never did get a complete complete fence built around the area, so the idea of actually checking people's tickets as they entered fell apart, and the whole thing ended up losing a fortune full of money but becoming a legendary event. I was there, Jill. I was at Woodstock back in 1968. I didn't spend much time at the music concerts themselves, which went on for around 8 hours a day, but I had a lot of time soaking in the ambiance and had a really good time there, and I still remember it very fondly. So that's what Woodstock 3 Days That Defined a Generation is. It is a basically a historical documentary. Every once in a while we get into some music, but it's always immediately stopped so that we get back to the historical material. Even when we do have a little bit of one, for example, Jimi Hendrix playing the Star Spangled Banner, there's voiceover over it and there are people talking. One thing this movie has mercifully little of is talking head commentaries. It's mostly voiceover and actual footage from the time. So I had a good time watching Woodstock 3 Days That Defined a Generation. Not one of the great documentaries, but a very interesting, historical, and somewhat unusual, because it's not a concert film, look back at a fascinating event that really did, in a certain way, kind of define that generation. So that is my zombified and rock and rolling story this week, Jill.
Rock and roll zombie. I'm starting a band. Thank you very much, David Sterrett. Films in Focus. The films The Dead Don't Die, Enzyte, Ever After, and Woodstock, 3 Days That Defined a Generation.